all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web, veteransradio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. And finally, PuroClean. PuroClean is the paramedics of property damage. It provides water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold removal, biohazard cleanup. It also has a focus on veteran franchisees. You can learn more about them by going to puroclean.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Dr. Helen Burgess and Dr. Allison Zalta. We're going to be talking about some research that's being done that is important for veterans to know, and particularly if they are suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder or some other issues like depression. Let me start with Dr. Helen Burgess. Helen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here.
She is a professor of psychiatry, and you might catch a little bit of accent. She got her PhD from the University of Melbourne, Australia. She is currently at the University of Michigan Medical Center. She has had a faculty appointment with Rush University Medical Center previously. And that is where she met Dr. Allison Zalta. Allison, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Zalta has a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania clinical internship, I guess.
So I got my clinical psychology PhD at University of Pennsylvania, and then I did my internship at the VA Palo Alto.
And we'll talk a little bit about that. And both of you, as I said, met up at Rush University Medical Center, had some overlapping research areas, which is where you both had some interest in veteran-related healthcare issues. Dr. Helen, why don't you talk to us a little bit about why your research has gravitated into some space that may be of interest to veterans?
Yes, well, I think this all started several years ago. As you mentioned, Allison and I were both working at Rush together. And I was funded through Department of Defense and also NIH to start testing morning light treatment in veterans with chronic low back pain. And at the time, and we still are to some extent also interested in the impact of light on pain, but as I started to prepare to run the study, I realized that some of the veterans would come in with some PTSD symptoms, but I really had no idea how to best measure that. So at that point, I reached out to Allison for advice on how we could assess that. And indeed, at the end of the study, we did find a significant reduction in PTSD symptoms.
Now, I'm going to make you explain this in fifth grade terms so we veterans can understand it. What is morning light?
Yeah, so morning light treatment traditionally has been used to treat winter depression. So classically, people sit in front of a large light box for about an hour or so shortly after they wake up in the morning. Some of those light boxes what we call broad spectrum light. So they look like bright white light. But more recently, devices that we call wearable light devices have been developed, and that is actually what we used in our recent study. And they kind of, I guess you could describe them as light glasses. So you wear them as if they're glasses, and they have some LEDs that shine light just underneath your eyes, into your eyes. But they're not right in front of your eyes, so you can still use your computer, you can read. And the nice thing is you do not need to sit in front of the light box for the whole hour. You can now actually do other things around the house, which we found people really enjoyed being able to do.
So if you're saying that if I'm wearing these morning light glasses for about an hour a day at the beginning of the day, it somehow helps lower pain, depression, my post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and we think there's three different mechanisms by which this might be working. One is we know morning light treatment helps reduce depression. And when you reduce depression or depressive symptoms, then things like pain and PTSD symptoms improve as well. We also know morning light treatment can help improve sleep. It's not a huge effect, but there is some improvement in sleep as well. And there is a connection between sleep and pain. And we know that sleep is often impaired in association with PTSD as well. And then the third pathway would be through the circadian system, which is our body clock in the brain. And it's driving circadian rhythms and pretty much everything you can think of, both for our psychological health and our physical health. And often with our irregular sleep schedules and kind of, you know, our crazy modern lifestyles, we tend to have some circadian disruption. So when we start following a regular sleep schedule and we get that morning light, and light is the strongest environmental signal to the circadian clock, then it's a way of stabilizing the circadian system. And that leads to a lot of health benefits across a broad spectrum of areas, including pain, PTSD. So, yeah, we found morning light treatment to be useful across a broad spectrum of clinical health disorders.
Very interesting. Now, Dr. Allison, you are a clinical psychologist, and we were talking earlier about your time at Rush University Medical Center, but more specifically, you were the research director at the Center for Veteran and Family Health, I think it was called, which was funded by the Wounded Warrior Project. Do I have that basically right?
Yep, that's right.
And as a clinical psychologist, when this this doctor of psychiatry came in with this crazy idea on, hey, maybe morning light is helpful, what was your thinking? Where did it take you?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I will say at first I was a little bit skeptical, and I asked Helen to show me the data that she had collected on veterans with low back pain, and I was really surprised to see that for the veterans who had PTSD, they had what we'd call clinically meaningful improvements. So they had enough of a symptom reduction that we think it would make a meaningful impact in their lives. And I was really surprised to see that, and also really excited, because my experience working with veterans has shown that as much as I love psychotherapy, and I think psychotherapy is incredibly valuable in treating PTSD, we know it's effective, it's often really hard for veterans to get it. And so having alternative treatments that people can do in their own homes is just a really exciting possibility. And that's what really motivated me to start working with Helen on this project.
And I think you hit on a really important point. Over the years, as we've talked to veterans with PTSD and talked to various healthcare professionals about ways that this can be worked on and managed, veterans are a very proud group. First off, to go ask for help or even acknowledge the problem is the challenge one to get over. But having to go somewhere every 3 days a week, set times, some of this becomes so rigid, there's not a lot of follow-through. So the idea that this might be a therapy that, as you said, had clinical meaningful reductions is kind of exciting, isn't it, Dr. Ellison?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really exciting because we know that we're going to need many different solutions to tackle the problem of PTSD among veterans. It's not going to be one thing that's going to kind of address all of the need. And so the fact that morning light treatment is so accessible to people that they can, you know, it's commercially available, people can buy their own devices and use them in their own homes, is just really exciting in terms of potentially getting treatment to a lot more people.
Dr. Helen Burgess, you had mentioned that your research initially was funded by, in part, by DOD. I'm always curious as to how the what happens when the funding runs out. Does the funder simply just put the report on the shelf and we never hear about it again? Or talk to us a little bit about how your research and work has been maybe accepted or expanded upon.
Yeah, so I guess the answer is when the funding runs out, you know, hopefully by that point you've completed this study, you publish it, and then you use that as a launch pad to apply for more funding, is really how the cycle continues. So that veteran study that Allison that we worked on together, and that the chronic pain study, the results that the changes in the PTSD symptoms, the improvements that we saw, Allison and I then decided to run a small study, internal pilot study, specifically now testing the morning light treatment in people with significant PTSD symptoms. And that also showed some really nice results. And then we used that study to apply for a much larger NIH grant. And that is what funded the current publication that is out there in psychiatry research. But I also want to point out that in science, it's really important that results are reproduced. And ideally, you have separate independent groups testing things and finding the same kind of results. And we're really excited that there's two other research groups actually that have now published that morning light treatment can help with PTSD symptoms.
You're absolutely right. It can't just be a one-off. It's got to be replicable and to prove up that, hey, this wasn't just a fluke. It really does work. And the size of the study is always important. So is this a study, Dr. Burgess, that has, are we talking 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people?
It's sort of medium, I guess. I've done, I think that first study, Allison and I think it was only 15 people. This is closer to 50. And actually, Allison has taken the lead on, I think just last week, submitting a new grant application to now start testing this in even a larger sample. I think the largest sample so far in a single study has been around 70 people. So we're at the stage where I think we need to start moving into larger clinical trials of at least 100, maybe even a few hundred people.
Dr. Zalta, as you think about this, and other groups are beginning to look at this as well, can you comment about whether or not you've had any interaction with the VA National about, hey, we're interested, we're going to help, we're going to do more? What's the temperature of how VA has looked at this as it might apply to the patients it treats?
Yeah, I'll say I haven't had direct conversations with folks at the VA. And at the same time, I will say that colleagues of mine, certainly that work with veterans, have been interested and excited to try to understand whether we can use this as an alternative treatment or potentially to help boost the effects of the treatments that we know work. So I think there is some excitement. As Helen said, we're kind of at the stage where we need some of those larger trials to feel really very, very confident that this is the way to go. And I think once we have that, then really trying to disseminate this treatment is going to be a critical next step.
So much of science and medical research is international. Has this morning light treatment or therapy, is it being used anywhere else in the world here, Dr. Helen?
Yeah. Yeah, it's used around the world. Morning light treatment or therapy was first developed, as I mentioned, for winter depression, or what sometimes we call seasonal affective disorder. And certainly here in Michigan, we tend to experience higher rates of that than Allison
exactly.
maybe experiences
exactly.
in California. Yes, I think after those initial trials, then most of the work has been done in what we call non-seasonal depression, so depression that is sort of year-round and doesn't just pick up in the fall and in winter. And there's now what we call meta-analyses, which are these publications in which they go around and they combine the results of many, many, many different studies to kind of help create a sort of global or average effect. And there's been at least three of those now looking at morning light treatment for non-seasonal depression and finding medium effect sizes, which means that morning light therapy is as effective as pharmaceutical antidepressants. But interestingly, the side effects of morning light therapy they're really quite reduced compared to these pharmacological treatments. And the most significant one for morning light therapy would be headaches. And the literature suggests, and it has certainly been matches what we've experienced in our trials, is that new headaches can start typically in the first week with the morning light therapy. And some people say, that's enough for me, this isn't for me, and that's, of course, totally fine. Other people say, well, the literature suggests if I stick it out, these headaches will disappear. And certainly that is what they experience. So that is the number one side effect that we've noticed in our studies and fits the rest of the literature. But yeah, morning light therapy is used around the world, mostly, I would say, for depression. The PTSD work, to our knowledge, has really been here within the U.S. And we, as I mentioned, have also started to explore it in terms of the area of pain as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is it being used elsewhere for the low back pain, which is kind of where you started? And did your research on low back pain and morning light therapy result in clinically meaningful reduction in pain?
Yeah, we did see that with chronic low back pain. That veteran study, as we described, kind of spun off into the work with Allison, looking specifically at PTSD. There was also a second spin-off from that study, which was to focus more on people with chronic pain conditions. And the one that we really ended up focusing on was fibromyalgia, which is a chronic widespread pain condition. And we were funded to run a small pilot study, and that went quite well. And then that moved on to a more medium-sized study similar to this PTSD study that we've just published. And then going back and again requesting for more funding, now we're at the stage where we've just launched a clinical trial and it will be in 400 people with fibromyalgia. And it's a fully remote trial, so we're enrolling people across the country. That will be our largest clinical trial to date testing morning light treatment for a chronic pain condition.
And if people wanted to register for that study, is that something that they could do? And if so, how?
Yes. Yeah, so a really useful resource for people if they're interested in participating in what we call clinical research studies is you can go to clinicaltrials.gov, which is a website run by NIH, the National Institutes of Health, and you can enter in different search terms for different illnesses or studies that are out there. You will find our studies registered there and there's contact information on there. I guess another website being in Michigan that I would plug is the University of Michigan also has what we call a research registry, where people can sign up, again, interested in participating in all kinds of different research. And that the website for that is umhealthresearch.org. And they already have over about 80,000 people who have signed up on that. And that is a huge help for all of the researchers at University of Michigan that are trying to recruit participants for their study. So certainly if anyone is interested in participating, that is also a great place to register at.
Well, let me back up to something, like, because I don't think we've fully explored this. When I wear my morning light glasses, if that's what I'm wearing, I think you said I wear them for like an hour a day. But do I have to do that for the rest of my life? What's the process here for how long I'm in using the therapy? And then how long does the results of less pain or less depression or less PTSD symptoms, can you talk to us about how long that lasts, I suppose?
Yeah. No, those are great questions. In the original veteran study, we did track people for 30 days after the end of the light treatment. And I will say, to my surprise, we still found some benefits in mood and pain and sleep 30 days later. But you raise a really good question, which is this a therapy people need to do every day? Once they're feeling better, can they maybe do it every second day or third day? And this is exactly one of the questions that Allison is trying to answer in her new grant submission, to help us get a better handle on, as this treatment starts to be disseminated into the real world and we're all dealing with all these other things going on in our everyday life, you know, what should this long-term maintenance treatment start to look like after perhaps an acute treatment period of every day once people improve? How can we maintain those benefits without necessarily having to do the treatment every day? The answer right now is we just don't know. But
I just knew, Dr. Zalta, I'd get to a point where you all said, we just need more research.
And that's what you're... I will add just to Helen's other prior response that, so different folks have tested different lengths of treatment. We've been testing 4 weeks every day. So that's been kind of the dose that we looked at in one of our most recent trials. And Helen, I don't know if you can speak to kind of what the range of studies has tested and, you know, why we think 4 weeks might be a good first try to see how that helps.
Yeah. There's one other study that did 6 weeks. We ended up choosing 4 weeks, and we sort of consistently done that actually in a lot of our studies. And that was mostly informed by those meta-analyses I referred to on non-seasonal depression, where they do show people start improving in the first week, but in studies that had a placebo, they find that the significant difference between the placebo and morning light therapy doesn't start to emerge until around weeks 3 and 4. And so that was the reason why we said, okay, we're going to do 4 weeks. And so far that has worked pretty well for us.
Now, you said earlier, Dr. Burgess, that this is commercially available equipment, I suppose, for morning light therapy. And I guess if I went on my search engine or my favorite shopping site, I could find somebody promoting some sort of glasses or screen or something for morning light therapy for seasonal depression.
Yep.
I got the term wrong there, but is there something you should put a asterisk on here and say it's this wavelength, it's this type, it's this, because I suspect there's a lot of hucksters out there.
Yeah, no, that is a good question. And it turns out that the circadian system is most sensitive to blue wavelengths of light. So blue light in the morning is great. We don't love blue light in the evening, which a lot of us get from our cell phones, because in the evening we're trying to wind down for sleep. And having a lot of blue light in the evening is making our brains think that it's morning time, or at least daytime. But I will say when the light gets bright enough, and often light boxes, the intensity is enough, you wouldn't necessarily see any larger effect compared to dimmer blue light, for example, versus a really bright white light. So recommendations would be, you know, some people actually really enjoy sitting in front of a light box, and our recommendations there go for something that's quite bright. The companies will often market themselves as being around 10,000 lux. They are bright. They're not 10,000 lux at the level of the eye. They're 10,000 lux at the level of the box. But those marketed devices will work. And we encourage large light boxes, not small ones, because a large light box means you can move around a little bit in front of it and still get the light. And it's also going to appear less glary, whereas if you have this smaller focal point coming from a smaller light box, that sometimes can be a bit more unpleasant. In terms of the wearable, I think it's fine to mention the device that we've used because we have no financial connection with the company at all. It's actually a company originally coming out of Australia, believe it or not. And it's called the Retimer device. There are other wearable light treatment devices out there, and people should feel free to take a look at those. We kind of tested them all on ourselves, and we felt that the Retimer was the most comfortable one. And the Retimer company has recently come out with version 3. We use version 2, which we like because it has an adjustable nose piece, which just means if people wear glasses or they have different shaped heads, that there is a way to move these glasses around a little bit and really look for the perfect fit. But we always explain to participants in our studies that with the Retimer device, if it's positioned correctly, you'll essentially see a lot of blue-green light when you look in the mirror around your eyes, under your eyebrows, almost sort of an oval circled around your eyes. And if you see that, then for sure you know that you're getting the light. So there are a variety of options out there for people. I think the main devices are available on Amazon, so that's usually a good place to go and at least take a look. And people obviously can look at ratings and things and prices, things like that.
Well, this has been an interesting conversation. And you know, when you kind of explain how it moved from seasonal defective disorder and depression into the areas that may be of interest and help to veterans, it kind of all makes sense. But unless you guys tied it together, you know, I would never have thought of it. And I'm not surprised more research is needed, right, Dr. Zalta?
Absolutely.
Well, we thank both of you, Dr. Allison Zalta and Dr. Helen Burgess, for spending some time with Veterans Radio today to explain this interesting research and hopefully a new at-home therapy that may be of helpful to veterans on a number of fronts, from pain to better sleep to PTSD symptoms. It's all pretty exciting stuff, and we look forward to hearing more as your research develops.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much, Tim. Yeah.
Thank you, ladies.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.